Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy. So, Justin.
Yes, Sydney.
There is a trendy, popular topic that I've been getting lots of questions about lately.
I probably know about it then. If it's trendy and hot, I'm looped in probably already, but I'll humor you.
Well, by all means, then.
I mean, I'm not a mind reader. I just, I will probably know all about this hot topic.
Well, as you may guess, I get lots of questions actually about weight loss in general. A lot of patients who are trying to lose weight and are not sure how to do it. And so as a result, I am usually kept abreast of most of the new kind of fad diets because somebody's always trying them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times this works the way like backwards. I hear about them and then I have to go read about them and figure them out and kind of come to a conclusion as to whether or not they're dangerous or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the one that everybody's talking about these days is the ketogenic diet.
Yeah, keto. Yeah. Heard a lot about that. I've dabbled in the low carb and slow carb worlds, and so I've heard a lot of chatter about keto diet. Because of my time with Atkins, I know what the name refers to, but I don't know that much about it. I don't know how it differs from like other sorts of plans that are out there.
I thought this would be a good topic, and we've had lots of people, I should say, suggest this, tweet it and Facebook message and email us about this because it is so popular and wanting to know, is it real? Does it work? And as I started to dig into it, the history of it, it's funny. This is one of those things that as I started to read, I thought, I remember learning about this in medical school. But I hadn't really thought about it since then.
Okay.
So the keto diet specifically differs from these other low carb diets, I think most interestingly, in its origins.
How so?
So the keto diet actually dates back to the 1920s. But it was not initially developed as a weight loss plan.
What was it?
The keto diet started out as a treatment for epilepsy.
Okay, I've never ever heard that before.
Okay, so to take you way back in the way back machine for a second, as far back as Hippocrates, there was this physician's notice that there was this association between starvation and fewer seizures in patients who were prone to seizures. Okay. So there was already a connection. There was something that you could do with your diet that would make you have less seizures, or at least this is what Hippocrates observed and then theorized. And there were also certain, as a result of this, there were certain treatment regimens developed for people with epilepsy that mainly were, I mean, they were basically starvation kind of diets,
okay. But
also eliminated certain foods.
Well, if it's a starvation diet, then...
well.
That goes without saying, right?
Well, some of them eliminated only some foods so that you were almost starving, but not completely.
Okay.
Galen also advised specifically like fasting for epilepsy, intermittent fasting for epilepsy. So for a long time, we didn't really know why, but we knew that if you changed your eating patterns in very drastic ways, you could reduce the frequency of your seizures.
Okay.
So in 1911... This is we're jumping way forward now.
Yeah.
So in 1911, two doctors in Paris, Gulip and Marie, Drs. Gulup and Dr. Murray, treated 20 epileptic patients with starvation. I don't know the details. They didn't really talk about the details of how, I mean, obviously they got something.
Yeah,
you can't starve people forever. You got to give them something. But they gave them very minimal food intake and recorded that they had amazing success in terms of reducing the frequency of these patients' seizures. So this is obviously not a solution. We can't just starve people.
Yeah.
But it did lead to a lot of interest in...
So there's something to it. I mean, yeah. There's something to, obviously not a long-term tenable solution, but there's something to the idea of dietary changes in reducing the frequency of seizures.
Yeah, there's something that happens in your body when you enter a state of starvation that somehow reduces the frequency of seizures. So in the early 1900s, a lot of other physicians in the U.S. started, based on these results, started following suit and trying to experiment with different diets to see what would happen. There was a Bernard McFadden and Hugh Conklin in Battle Creek. We've talked about Battle Creek before. That's where the
Kellogg's were from. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they dabbled in strange diets as well. And they both tried this with their patients, and they thought it was helping. Again, and there was no specific plan at this point. We're just talking about, like, drastically reducing food intake, you know, just not eating very much at all. Because we still weren't sure what it was about the starvation that made people stop.
Yeah, it could have been anything, right?
Right. Conklin was kind of studying under McFadden. He was kind of the guru of this at the time. And McFadden specifically would advise intermittent fasting for basically everything. Any medical condition.
I know we're not talking about IF right now, but I've heard a lot of hubbub about intermittent fasting.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe you tell me about that one next.
We could do that next time. But he was actually, and he basically was practicing this way back in the early 1900s. So he would advise that you fast anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks, depending.
That's a very large range. That's almost feels like guessing.
Well, it depended on the condition that you were suffering from.
All right.
So some you only had to fast 3 days, some you had to fast for 3 weeks. And it may have actually been kind of an accident that he had such great success with seizures, because he was telling everybody to fast for everything.
So eventually you're going to get
lucky. Something worked. He also, by the way, had a magazine, this doctor... I think
that's not actually true. Actually, I set up the false dichotomy that if you use a treatment on other things, it'll fix something eventually. There's lots of things we talk about that don't fix anything.
Well, that's true. I guess if you do that enough, odds are eventually some treatment might work for something.
If it does,
maybe
for it, maybe.
Possibly. Maybe.
If you use enough or not too much.
This is not the way we practice medicine, nor would I advise you to really do anything
this way. That's a wild sort of approach all around.
Just a side note on this McFadden guy. He also had a magazine that he published for quite a while called Physical Culture. And the whole idea was like, humans are puny and we need to teach them how to be big and strong and beautiful.
Charles Atlas kind of stuff.
Yeah. And we can do it through diet and exercise.
Accurate. Like this. Right?
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, this was all very much like, we will improve the human species. We'll make you bigger, stronger, faster.
No.
Eat these weird diets and do all these wild exercises. I imagine lots of like squats.
It's weird that would need to be an ongoing magazine, right? Like, it's like kind of like Men's Fitness that's been going on for so long. Like, certainly by now there's enough information there for us to get fit, right? Like, certainly
he had to keep hammering away at like inspiring housewives to look good for their husbands or whatever the message was back in the early 1900s. So this kind of research, probably in like a less flashy way, was being repeated by doctors Lennox and Cobb at Harvard, and they were really interested as to why starvation might do this. I mean, it's not just that you can't eat; like, there's something that happens metabolically when your body is in a state of starvation that must be causing this. And so they began to study the starvation state, and they found that when you don't have glucose, sugar, for energy, then you start to break down fats.
Right.
Right? And what do they make?
Energy.
Well,
waste
products. I thought you would know this.
Ketones.
There you go.
Yes.
Ketones. Ketosis. Yes.
Ketosis.
Ketosis. You're making ketones because you are breaking down fats.
When I was on the Atkins, I had to get ketosis strips from a weird mom and pop pharmacy. The only place I could find around here that sold them. You got to pee on the strips. And
I believe you can find them pretty much anywhere now.
Well, it's a different era, Sid. Back then, I had to go out to the food emporium for my sprouted grain Elijah bread. It's on every store shelf all around you.
Now it's at the Kroger.
It's at the nice Kroger. It's a zhuzhy Kroger, not regular Kroger.
Call it the Cha-Cha Kroger.
Cha-Cha Kroger.
The Gucci Kroger.
Gucci Kroger. That at Gucci Kroger, they have like all kinds of sprouted grains.
Yeah.
At the like mid-tier to low-tier Krogers, you're not going to find that.
So there
don't
was
your time looking for cheese either, folks. You want cheese? You got to go to Gucci Kroger.
Go to Gucci Kroger. That's right next to the sushi place.
Yeah. Gucci Kroger.
They make sushi right there.
You know you're a Gucci Kroger because they got a sushi prison in there, just like a little island where they make people stand in it and make sushi.
Let's call it Sushi Island.
Sushi Island is a much more pleasant metaphor. Thank you. I think they have an aggress.
It's right next to the fancy cheese island. And the loose nuts stand.
Yeah, no one mans Fancy Cheese Island, though. Fancy Cheese Island is an island unto itself. Sushi Island is manned 24 hours a day, I'm assuming.
So there was a Dr. Wilder at Mayo. Everybody's doing this research at this point now, right? Everybody's all excited. They're like, we found ketones. What do they do? We don't know. Let's try this. So he proposed that you could probably treat patients better by eating food instead of starving.
Love that.
And focus on foods that will produce the ketones. So starvation produces ketones. Breaking down fats produces ketones. Eat fat. Break it down into ketones. That's better than eating nothing.
That seems like
that's where this comes from.
That seems like kind of a hacky solution, but is that right?
Yeah, a diet that does that is ketogenic. So the more fat you eat, you break that down preferentially.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't, I mean, now the only way to do this, though, is, and we're going to get to this, actually, that's the next thing, is through a very restrictive diet.
Mm-hmm.
So on Atkins, do you remember how many grams of carbs you could eat?
20 at the start.
Uh-huh.
In induction. That lasts for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then it built for like 30, and then I think 50 was like long term. And then I think it was like 100. Once you got to like your goal weight.
So the diet that Wilder started using that was the original ketogenic diet, this is the original KD, was 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight, 10 to 15 grams of carbohydrates per day.
Y'all, that's crazy. Like, that's like...
And then the remainder of your calories will be in fat.
I mean, you could clear that with carrots and cauliflower. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's nothing. Those 20 grams, by the way, you can only get in the induction phase. To give you some idea, I think you're supposed to only get from, like, leafy greens and vegetables and stuff like that. So there's, like, it is a tough row.
And this isn't... This ketogenic diet is the basis for what I think the standard regimen that a lot of the books, because there are endless books on the ketogenic diet. I was trying to find the first one that was selling it as a weight loss diet as opposed to a treatment for epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I ran out of patience for books about the ketogenic. They're endless books about this. But I think the general idea is that you're supposed to eat like 70% fat, 25% protein, and 5% carbs is like the general breakdown.
No, thank you.
Based on this regimen. And this original regimen, by the way, was only developed for children.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was a way to reduce seizures in children.
Why not adults?
The easy answer is this. Adults couldn't do it.
Cowards.
It was a lot easier to give these diets and study them in children because parents were administering them.
Mm-hmm.
So you could trust that. I mean, these were parents who usually had kids who their seizures were frequent and debilitating, and they weren't at the time we didn't have a lot of great treatments anyway, so they weren't responding well to the treatments, and so they were desperate for a something that might work, and so they were willing to do the hard thing and do this diet. A lot of adults just would not stick
adults
to it.
Adults require us to breed a race of super parents to parent the parents.
But if the kids have to eat whatever their parents give them, it was a lot easier to control. Mm-hmm. And they also noticed things like improvement in cognitive function and behavior, they reported. So not just a reduction in seizures, but like the kids said they could think more clearly.
That was not my experience in severely reducing my carbohydrates. I could think very clearly about Cheetos. I could almost visualize them perfectly in my mind. I do not remember much clarity from those days.
Now, at this point, when all these studies started to show improvement and this diet was formally written down as the keto diet, it just exploded in popularity because, again, at the time, there really weren't great there were very few medicines at all for seizures, and they made a lot of kids really kind of drowsy and out of it, and they didn't always work. And so the ketogenic diet became the standard treatment for all kids with epilepsy, as in like first line treatment. Every textbook that you would read from like 1941 to 1980, if you go to epilepsy, would tell you ketogenic diet.
Okay.
And you know, like I said, there was evidence that it would work. Not in every single kid, not every single time, but it definitely was found to be successful. In 1972, there was a Livingston who was a doctor who did a lot of research in this area and treated a lot of patients with epilepsy at Johns Hopkins. And he went over 1,000 children with epilepsy that he followed for a decade. And from that, using the ketogenic diet, he said that 52% had complete control of their seizures, and then an additional 27% had improved control of their seizures.
Wow.
On this diet. So pretty good evidence that this could work. Why did it work? We're still not entirely sure.
That's comforting.
Yeah, but I mean, the more important thing is that it does.
True, fair.
But we're still not entirely sure what the ketones do to the brain to reduce the frequency of seizures. There's it changes the nervous conduction in some way. People have proposed that it alters the pH of the inside the neurons in some way. Mm-hmm. Either way, the point is that somehow these ketone bodies, when they cross the blood-brain barrier and get up into the brain, reduce the frequency of seizures.
Oh, okay.
We know that this can happen. But as time passed, new and more effective medications were made. Mm-hmm. And it became a lot easier if your child, especially if you had to transition into an adulthood, you know, if you still had epilepsy as an adult and you needed to control that, it became very hard to maintain that diet once. Yeah, I mean, you imagine
buy food.
A teenager who for the first time can go to a fast food restaurant on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a lot harder to control. So medications kind of took over. And as we had better medicines that wouldn't make everybody drowsy and loopy, and we had medications that you could take on a regular basis and still feel awake and functional and think straight, the diet began to kind of fall out of favor. Because it was hard.
Sure, yeah, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah, it's a very hard diet to maintain. There were efforts to try to make it a little more palatable. There was a specific diet where it was called the medium chain triglyceride oil diet, which was basically a way of introducing other fats that you could add to like these weird pureed shakes that you would have to make to get the right mix of calories and everything into kids and this was a little bit more palatable, but overall, if you could take a pill and that would control your seizures,
of course,
a lot of people began to prefer that. And as fewer kids were put on the diet, fewer dietitians were trained in it. And as you can imagine, this is a very difficult diet to explain to parents. So it's not like only eat this many carbs a day. It's much more restrictive than that. So if you don't have dietitians who are very well versed in how to communicate that to parents, then you're going to have more trouble using the diet. And so then fewer people are using it correctly. So then the effectiveness to wear off.
Yeah.
So doctors stopped prescribing it. And pretty soon it was kind of like people forgot about it. It became this like third tier thing. So if you've got a patient that you've tried on medication and you've tried on another medication and you're still not getting anywhere, then you might consider adding the ketogenic diet at that point, as opposed to, you know, 30 years before that, when it was the number one primary mainstay of childhood epilepsy treatment.
Well, it couldn't have gone away, though, is it? Because I hear about it all the time.
That's right. It came back.
Go on.
Well, before I do, let's go to the billing department.
Gosh, let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. So the keto diet was just starting to somehow going to make a comeback.
That's right. So everything changed in the 90s. This is why the keto diet did not fade into, well, I guess the kind of thing that we cover on that.
Into Sawbones, yeah.
Into Sawbones history. A Dateline special revived it. It told the story of young Charlie Abrahams, who was the son of Hollywood director Jim Abrahams, who's responsible for Airplane. Partially responsible, I guess.
He's a writer?
A writer?
Yeah, that's all right.
Yes. Okay. And then he directed some stuff too, I think.
Okay.
And the Naked Gun movies.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. And his son, Charlie, was being treated for epilepsy with little success. And so his family learned, when trying to just find anything that would work, learned about the ketogenic diet, and they used it, and Charlie had a huge improvement in his symptoms. And they kind of became advocates for it after that. So they started the Charlie Foundation to spread the word and to educate more people about the possibility that if they had a child who was resistant to a lot of medications and they couldn't seem to get the seizures under control, this could really improve their life. And so in pursuit of spreading the word about this diet, in 1997, the movie First Do No Harm was made, starring Meryl Streep. And I think this is the one that he directed it. And this told the story of his son and how they use the diet.
It's almost kind of unfortunate. I shouldn't say that. I don't mean it as unfortunate, but the fact that people found a diet in obscurity that is actually useful from ancient wisdom, even though it's the 20s, but still, that you see that fallacy so often in like a bunch of woo and alternative medicine, like. It's a little concerning to me that this one time it worked. They found an old diet that nobody used anymore, and instead of a gun, it was actually useful.
Well, this
I'm glad, obviously, for the people that it helped, but it's just
I was going to say precedent. This. No, I was going to say this at the end, but I think this is a good place to make this point. There are a lot of people who will tell you that food alone can be medicine, that you could control all of your medical problems through diet, and I would push back and say, well, no, that's not entirely true. But I think that's why sometimes medicine can be frustrating for people. Mm-hmm. For, you know, sometimes, especially like chronic medical conditions or difficult to control medical conditions can be frustrating, because what I'm going to tell you, and I think this is the right thing, so I think this is the truth, this is why I'm saying it, is that the answer is usually somewhere in the middle. It's gray. Medications are needed for some things. Yes, diet can improve some other things. Everything's not one or the other. Mm-hmm. Food is not the only medicine, and medicine is not the only medicine. There are times for both, and there are times that you can use them together and improve situations. And that's a lot less satisfying than just having one thing you can advocate for.
Right.
Food
right.
is medicine. But that's the truth. Sometimes a diet regimen like this can really work for a medical condition.
So people got way back into the keto diet because of Meryl's flick.
Yes.
And this the situation.
And what was also happening at this moment in history is the low carb craze.
Yeah. It was hot right then.
Yeah. So you can see so first all of these patients got back into it. So first a lot of people whose family members or who personally had epilepsy began to get interested in the ketogenic diet for that condition as a result of this film and the Dateline special.
Okay.
And the number of studies on the ketogenic diet just shot through the roof. Like, if you look at the years between you know, when the first anti-epileptic medications that were really effective came out, and this movie. If you look in between there, there were a couple studies, maybe a year being done on the ketogenic diet. Mm-hmm. If you look after this Dateline special and then the subsequent movie, tons of studies came out to see if it really would work. And of course, they were finding that it could be effective. Yes. Again, still just for epilepsy. Because and I'm going to say this several times, this is a medical treatment. It's not just a diet. This is a treatment that you should take as seriously as if you were taking a medication.
Because it is
a medical treatment.
Okay, got it.
And there are side effects. There are some that maybe you consider not such a big deal, like constipation or diarrhea or getting nauseous and vomiting sometimes. And those could improve over time. And also, if you have a dietitian who's helping you kind of tailor your meals, you know, to something mm-hmm. that might not make you so sick. You can also get some things like vitamin deficiencies from this diet that can lead to osteoporosis in some cases, thinning of the bones. Mm-hmm. Another problem that you can see is not what you'd think. You actually can get elevated cholesterol at the very beginning, which it is a high fat diet, so maybe you would assume that. But you can see some really out of whack cholesterol profiles mm-hmm. in people who are on this short term. Now, for a lot of patients, this will iron itself out long term, and you'll actually see improvement in the cholesterol over time. But transiently, you can see some really high bad cholesterols on this diet.
Mm-hmm.
And also, even though all these things I mentioned can be manageable, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And if you don't stick to it, it won't work. And I don't mean like, I mean, I'm on Weight Watchers, and I have times where I'm like, I'm going to just eat half this muffin and I'm not going to count it because I need half this muffin right now. And that's fine. That's not going to hurt anybody. But if you're not sticking to this diet, it will not work. And you have to stick to it to the letter. And I should note, historically, a variation on this was used. We've mentioned this on the diabetes episode. Mm-hmm. That idea that starvation would improve diabetes was also very prominent for a while, which is why you're going to see like this get tied into a treatment for diabetes. The problem with that, of course, is that we do not want type 1 diabetics going into ketosis.
It can be very dangerous for them, right?
Yes, that is called diabetic ketoacidosis. DKA is a very dangerous state and can be fatal, which is why I would not recommend this for a type 1 diabetic.
Okay.
So how did this become a diet trend? Well, people who couldn't stick to the ketogenic diet in its entirety started kind of trying other low-carb diets that weren't necessarily as restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at just the right time for the Atkins diet.
Mm-hmm.
So the Atkins diet was very popular. It was a low-carbohydrate diet, and it was easier, as you can imagine, than the ketogenic diet.
Yeah.
And it also could send you into a state of ketosis.
It's supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, eating low carb doesn't necessarily put you in ketosis.
Really?
I mean, you can get in ketosis, but you have to, I mean,
I was you're always, not,
you
I,
have to check to see if you
I
are.
I always use this as a barometer of success. Probably not the right word, but I use this as a metric of success. I'll say that. And if I was in ketosis, I knew I was doing a good job.
If you are in ketosis, it means that you have succeeded in getting yourself into ketosis. That is about all I will say.
And the strip turned purple, so that's huge.
Yes, so you have definitely succeeded in that. And so all these low-carb fans who, like people who were using the ketogenic diet, couldn't stick to it, and so kind of went into Atkins or one of the other, you know, sure. What South Beach, and you've done slow carb and all these other variations, low glycemic index diets. Variations on low carb, started to try out those. People who were trying out these other low carb diets started in their searching, finding evidence of the ketogenic diet. Mm. And as you have already said, if you were doing Atkins, you were told that you needed to get into a state of ketosis. That was important. And so now you have this diet that's called the keto diet.
Just put you right there.
That seems even better, right?
Yeah.
That sounds better. And like and for a lot of people, I don't even think they know necessarily what they're doing. Like, I'm supposed to be in ketosis. I'll check my urine to see if I'm in ketosis. If something puts me into ketosis faster, I'm doing good. So I'll do this diet, this keto diet.
Right.
And so we heard these like stories back, I think around like 2012 is where you can find like the origins of this becoming this weight loss fad. And there was this article about brides who were trying to make these keto smoothies and take them through in like tubes through their nose because they're so gross.
Ugh.
I mean, it's not like no sugar.
Yeah. I know. Ugh. A shake with no sugar is like so heinous.
Yeah, that's what a lot of these like a lot of people who were trying to do this diet, I mean, if you can just imagine some like some kind of fat, some kind of like with like coconut oil, I think is a popular one, some kind of like heavy duty fat, and you can throw in some like protein powder. I don't, is there any kind of milk you can do on this? Any kind of like almond, like nut hemp, milk or milk. Soy milk? I don't know. I mean, but like you would have to blend up this and it would have zero sweetness.
Yeah.
Imagine something that looks and like you look at it and you think this should be a vanilla milkshake and then there is zero sweetness to it. Ugh. And it's full of fat.
Ugh. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, so these are hard to ingest. And so then the ketogenic diet became this diet that people were using for weight loss and everybody was going keto. And now there are like a billion cookbooks and descriptions of how to do the diet. And there are ways to do it. Kind of like you said with Atkins, where you can do like an induction phase and then like, but generally speaking, you're supposed to keep yourself in ketosis to lose weight. And to keep yourself in ketosis, you don't just eat low carb.
Yeah. You have to.
I mean, it's extremely low carb. Like I said, I mean, if 10 to 15 carbohydrates a day,
that's really tough.
That's incredibly tough. And you have to eat lots of fat, which.
No, it sounds like a hard pass.
And it sounds like, you know, like I said, there was a lot of concern. This was true with Atkins too, that if people were eating all this fat, that their cholesterol was going to go through the roof. And there is some evidence that maybe early on it does. Long term, I don't have good evidence to tell you that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So if that helps. But generally speaking, you still have to eat a lot of fat and I don't particularly enjoy that. Does it work? Well, if you're going to eat this low carb, yes, you will lose weight.
Sure, because you can't eat anything you like. That's the secret of low carb. The secret no one will tell you is if you can't eat anything that tastes good, you will lose weight.
And this is the grand debate about low carb diets, right? Are you losing weight because, as Justin said, you're not getting to eat the things you like? Is it also because you're eating low calorie as a result of low carb? Carbs pack a lot of calories.
Sure.
It's hard for you to get in this. If you stick to one of these diets, it's very difficult to get in the same amount of calories as you would if you were eating carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to do. We don't want to eat that much lunch meat.
Maybe you don't.
Well, I mean, it's true. And so is it really a low calorie diet and you're just doing it in a roundabout way? Probably not just that. There's enough evidence to suggest that something else is happening when you do a low carb diet.
Well, I also found it's a little easier to control, like just be in control of cravings and eating and stuff if you're not on that sugar train.
The insulin spikes are where a lot of the interest lies. If you're not spiking your insulin in response to eating sugar all day, are you reducing cravings? And then you're reducing that, you know, insulin is a storage hormone. Every time you eat something sweet, your body releases insulin. It makes you store fat. Is that the key to weight loss is stopping those insulin spikes?
I don't know. Why are you asking me?
I'm saying that's the question. And that's why people theorize low carb works better. The thing is, there are small studies that suggest that it can help with some medical conditions like type 2 diabetes. Those same studies have been done with any low carb diet though, and type 2 diabetes. I mean, eating, and I think that makes sense. If you are a diabetic, a type 2 diabetic, people tell you to eat less sugar and watch your carbs.
Yeah.
So it makes sense why that might help. If you're a type 1 diabetic, I would be extremely cautious with anything like this.
Okay.
I would not voluntarily put yourself in ketosis.
Okay.
Obviously with things like high cholesterol, maybe in the long run it helps, which could that help with cardiac risk? Heart attack risk, maybe. But when they put them head to head in big studies with other diets, they don't always necessarily, ketogenic certainly doesn't necessarily outperform other low carb diets routinely. So can any low carb diet do this? Probably. And there are even some studies that suggest that you can get the same result by eating low calorie.
Hmm.
So, is it the magical key to weight loss? Probably not, because as I already mentioned, it's incredibly hard to stick to,
mm-hmm.
and most people don't.
And nothing is, I mean, you got to eat in a way that works for you.
This has to be something you can sustain for your whole life,
mm-hmm.
Or you'll gain the weight back.
And weight loss is a much less important goal than
health.
Being healthy and eating well and, you know, eating things that make you feel good and, you know, give you energy.
And
to fight crime.
Carbohydrates are good. Like
they
taste
also
good.
A lot of people aren't willing to talk about that, Sydney. That's a great point.
They taste yummy. And I agree. I mean, I limit my carbohydrates as part of the diet we're doing right now because it helps me lose weight. But I do eat some because I like them. And every once in a while, I eat a donut because I love donuts.
And you don't tell your phone.
So I don't tell my phone about that donut. But that's for me, and that's what makes me happy. And I think everybody's got to find that balance. But I would stress again, the ketogenic diet, especially if you have certain medical conditions, could make you ill.
Mm-hmm.
It is a treatment. It is a medical treatment.
It is not a fad diet. Enforce that.
And I would not approach it lightly. And I would certainly ignore celebrities like Kourtney Kardashian, who have claimed that doctors told her she needed to do the ketogenic diet because she had excess lead and mercury in her system, and this would help her get it out.
Those are not good doctors.
That's not a thing. Can you really think somebody told her that?
Maybe she was like half listening. I don't know.
These were not doctors.
I don't know which of them that she is. Is she the smart one?
I don't know the Kardashians. I know Kardashians are a thing, but yes, I don't know which one is which.
Folks, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to the taxpayers for using their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Hey, if you want a new podcast to listen to, check out Bubble. It's a new short-run sci-fi comedy series that Max Fun is doing. You can find it wherever fine podcasts are sold. Just search for Bubble. And I think you can get a kick out of it. Anyway, folks, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
All right.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.